south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, back in the saddle again after my little brush with COVID. You know, everyone's going to get it eventually, right? You know that. And now, according to most all scientific real reports, I've got lifetime immunity, or close to it. Isn't that nice? It seems everywhere you turn, someone knows a person, or two, or three, or four, who are down with it. Meanwhile, 90% of the world following mainstream idiots like Dr. Fauci, they've bought into the get-jabbed-every-6-months-for-life lunacy. Tell you what I did. I did the ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, and zinc protocol. Went to the stem cell clinic twice in the DR, the one that I'm taking my brother through to detox and get down from his 22 prescription meds, a last-ditch effort, too, to nullify his programmed knee and shoulder replacement surgeries. He's trying to avoid prosthetic joints, wouldn't you? Look, the guy's already been through 5 knee and shoulder surgeries up in the States. Now he's a walking pain ball with knee supports and a cane. So anyway, when I got the COVID, I popped into the stem cell clinic I'm bringing my brother back and forth to. I had 2 treatments of IV vitamin C and IV ozone. I knew that would help, and it did. Anyway, speaking of that stem cell clinic in the DR I've been talking about the last couple of shows, I've been getting all kinds of emails from people saying, Johnny, where is it? Tell me how to get there. What's it cost? Give me the lowdown. Well, I'm not going to give you the lowdown until I straighten out a few things with them, because remember, it's completely in Spanish, and if you come down and your Spanish sucks or you don't know Spanish at all, you're going to have a tough time. Yeah, sure, the docs speak a little English, but not enough for the detailed stuff you're going to need to have translated. And the lady at the front desk in charge, the doctor's wife, she's Swiss and speaks English, but she's not there every day. So right now, I'm working out a plan with them. They're translating all their admission forms into English at my request. Then you'll be able to go online, download those forms, fill them out, send them back to the doctor's wife. Her and the docs there will review everything and come up with a treatment plan, how long it's going to take and what it's going to cost. And they'll tell you what kind of radiography or tomography you need to have done if you're going to have a joint or 2 or 3 injected with stem cells. You can choose to have those scans done up in the States. Of course, that's an option, which will probably cost you an arm and a leg unless you have insurance. Or you can have them done when you get to the clinic at the lab they recommend right down the street, where it's ridiculously cheap. For example, my brother came down, had scans in his shoulders and knees. The total cost, $400. And the blood work he needed, $100. In the States, without insurance, that'd set them back at least $2,000. Probably a lot more. The thing is, though, I know Americans. There are lots of tire kickers out there. I get them at my seminar all the time. People promise they're coming to the seminar. They send me a bunch of emails over the months leading up to the seminar. And then suddenly, sorry, Johnny, can't make it. Can't fit it into my schedule after I've wasted all kinds of time answering questions. So I don't want to look like a fool in front of these stem cell people. I don't want what happens to me sometimes to happen to them. It would be a bad reflection on me. So if you're going to fill out an intake form, send it to them and let them do a workup on you. They're going to have to charge you something. Now, the first office visit, when they do the workup, check out the form, do the physical and stuff, check out the lab work, etc., is about $50. So I'm going to suggest to them to eliminate the window shoppers and tire kickers and to just deal with people who are really serious about it, that they charge the $50 office call to do the workup. It's only fair. I know how it is to have tire kickers dump a million questions on you, waste a lot of time, and then all of a sudden drop out at the last minute or just disappear. And even for you listeners out there who know some Spanish and can negotiate your way through a situation like that, I'm not going to refer anyone or make any recommendations till I work this plan out. Again, I want to refer serious clients, not tire kickers and window shoppers. And think about it. I do all the research. I don't make a thing off this. I'm doing it as a public service because I know it works. I don't need to do this, and all it takes is 1 or 2 people who end up being pesky time wasters to sour the whole idea. So please, for now, quit with the emails asking all the questions about the stem cell clinic. I'm not the answer man. You'll have to wait till the English intake form is ready. I'll certainly let you know when that happens, and I'll give you a blow-by-blow on what's happening with my brother, who's getting the complete workup. And he's probably the best test case there is. That said, a few words about the upcoming seminar. It kicks off in about 5 weeks now. From when the show goes out on Friday, January 14th. So, seminar day 1 is Friday, February 18th. That's the day we want our Guatemala contingent to arrive at the Guatemala airport. And we'll want everyone flying into El Salvador airport to come in Saturday, February 19th. It's a week long. We'll be going between Guatemala and El Salvador, you know, Bitcoin Beach and all that. And there's still time to sign on, vaxxed or not, because you've probably heard you got to be vaxxed to fly into Guatemala, but you don't to get into El Salvador. So people who aren't vaxxed will be flying into El Salvador, and the people who are vaxxed into Guatemala. We've got a nice plan worked out, so everyone will get to see exactly what they're hoping to see. We've still got some spaces left, so just go to expatplanb.com and click on the seminar link for all the info and sign-up details. Meanwhile, as Big Brother tries to get its hooks into everyone, even people down here in Latin America, comes this email from Mr. G, with yet more bad news coming out of Mexico. He says, Johnny, hopefully this email finds you content and happily embroiled in formulating your next seminar. Then he gives me a link to an interviewer who just moved to Mexico in the Guadalajara area from Kazakhstan. And apparently, Jalisco State here in Mexico, he says, is taking orders directly from Davos, that is, worldwide Big Brother, and not President López Obrador, who's been pretty loosey-goosey lately about COVID idiot rules and such, because he knows if they lock down, that is the end for tourism. Anyway, turns out, he says, they're posting cameras all over Guadalajara, giving out speeding tickets right and left by internet. On top of that, you're not allowed to pay cash if you park in a city parking lot. You must download an app on your enslaving smartphone. Talk about enforcement of state digital IDs. No government app, no parking. Meanwhile, farther south in old-fashioned, decrepitly corrupt Oaxaca State, it seems to be in another country completely within Mexico. Here, the politicals are content to steal and not install any surveillance infrastructure, at least not so far. It's characteristic of a failing state. The federals seem to be fading out and the state governments are ruling. In fact, I rarely see any federal police car on the roads here anymore. Not here in Oaxaca, where I live, says Mr. G. Still, the occasional cargo truck filled with National Guard troops rumbles on by. But what they're tasked to do is beyond me. He says, I'd be curious how you see the obvious global push to technocratic control and abolishment of capitalism in backward third world countries of Central America. He says, I am beginning to feel people who love liberty will find these spots and make a stand against the global state. Well, Mr. G, thanks for that, but I don't think freedom lovers want to take a stand against the state because they know they're going to lose. Because the state has the military and the guns. You just have to go to a state that has a very, very weak government and a military that's totally inept and useless. That's why we like Guatemala, El Salvador, and a handful of other Latin American countries so much. I think every smart person who loves liberty knows he's just got to get the hell out of Dodge and vote with his feet. I don't get it. People who think they can make a stand up in the States. Come on. It's a waste of time and money to set up a last stand. Look how people in Texas are trying to do that. You admire them for a while, but you see it's useless and it only costs lots of money. You're never going to win. You're just going to have to vote with your feet. And I don't mean vote with your feet and go to Texas, like a lot of people have done. To me, that's just a short-sighted intermediary plan. You got to get the hell out of the country. Now, Mr. G, you made the case for Mexico, how Guadalajara is turning into a kind of a police state. Well, you know why that is, don't you? That's because it's Mexico's university town. On top of that, it's got hundreds of medical centers and hospitals and research centers. It's become Mexico's high-tech town, so what do you expect? All that high-tech brings with it nerds, geeks, and surveillance. But more than that, a technological way to pick your pocket. That's why I appreciate places so much like Guatemala, El Salvador, and even the Dominican Republic. I ought to tell you about their tax structure sometime. Or, let's say, lack of. I've been there a bunch of times. You know they've got that stem cell clinic there, and I'm there with my brother. So I've been putting a lot of time in there lately. And I've yet to meet a Dominican small businessman who's ever filed a tax form. Even people who own these little clothing stores and tiendas, they tell me once they've got the permit to open, the sanitary permit, that's it. Nobody ever visits them again. Plus, they've got this really great law that says if your house is worth $100,000 or less, you never pay a dime in property taxes. Ever. All they pay is a transfer tax of around 2.5% to 3%, and that's it. So what do people do if their house is worth $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000? Well, ask me about that in person someday, because they got a workaround on that too. And somehow, it's legal. In fact, my seminar team's been pushing me to do the next one in the Dominican Republic. That might just come off, and then, of course, we'll all visit the stem cell clinic. So we're thinking about it. Stay tuned. Keep you posted. All right, now, you know, at the seminar, we've promised to hit Bitcoin Beach and see what that's all about. Meanwhile, there are people interested in doing the very same thing on Lake Atitlan in Guatemala, you know, one of the most beautiful lakes in the world. Listen to this email that just came in a while back. It's at least a month old. I haven't gotten to it because I'm getting so many emails, I can't answer them all. He says, "Hey, Johnny, I'm starting a Bitcoin project in Guatemala in Panachel on Lake Atitlan." He says, "My family and I traveled to Panajachel, Guatemala every summer for 6 years to help with a Christian ministry in Panajachel and to help with a school, too. After that, my surgical practice and entrepreneurial endeavors started to consume all my time and energy, so I hadn't been back down for a while. But over the last year, our desire to reengage with the community reignited, so my wife and I began to look for opportunities. In early 2021, I learned about Bitcoin Beach in El Salvador, and the wheels started turning. My desire was to bring a Bitcoin Beach model to Panajachel, which is a beautiful town in Lake Atitlan in the Guatemalan highlands. Lake Atitlan is consistently rated as one of the most beautiful lakes in the world. However, looks can be deceiving. The lake is surrounded by farming communities, and the farmers don't use sustainable techniques and use chemicals, which eventually find their way into the lake. And as with all developing countries, infrastructure, environmental protection, etc. are not priorities for the government." All right, me, Johnny here. You know, I have absolutely no use for anyone who sticks up for a Latin American government. They're all insidiously corrupt. And when someone says the environment is not a priority for a Latin government, I say, man, you got to take your goody-two-shoes off and look at the world like it really is. Everyone I know who's had a government contract in whatever Latin country has been stiffed, including me in the early days when I did voiceovers for commercials for governments. I got stiffed. So you got to do things on your own. Like, for example, the Bitcoin Beach idea. Anyway, then he says, "In the fishing villages around the lake, the debris in the water and on the land is a common sight. So our long-term goal would be to bring Bitcoin mining to Panajachel and help build out a better power infrastructure grid for the community. The idea," he says, "is to begin a circular economy in Panajachel. The children, for example, can be paid in satoshis for doing chores modeled on the Bitcoin Beach in El Salvador. In this case, cleaning Lake Atitlan would be the initial goal. Since Pana is a vibrant town, there are many shops, auto rickshaw drivers, boat taxis, and craft vendors that are targets for Bitcoin adoption." Then he says, "The success of Bitcoin Beach in El Salvador, in the town of El Zante, was in large part due to an anonymous donor who wanted to implement Bitcoin circular economy, combined with a guy named Roman Martinez's local knowledge and love for the community." He says, "As of November 4th, we have pledges for around nearly $9,000. All right, so it sounds like a great idea, and he wants to come on my show and talk about it, but you know me, well, your longtime listeners do anyway. In the 1,117 shows, I've only had one guest, an expert expat tax accountant, and I got lots of emails saying it was dead boring, so enough said about that. However, I'm open to having the guy come down and talk to us at the seminar, so we'll see if we can fit that in. Looks like he's doing all the right things. He's following exactly in the footsteps of how El Salvador did it, and he's learned a few lessons from what they did wrong. Because, you know, it's a brand new thing, a startup. You can't do everything right. Sometimes you just push on ahead, let the chips fall where they lie. Like, for example, in El Salvador, especially in Bitcoin Beach and the coastal areas there, it was difficult to get the old-time vendors and the old people in general to put the Bitcoin app on their smartphone. A lot of them didn't even have a smartphone that would take the app. So the Bitcoin people, they know now they should have concentrated on all the young kids, everyone under, let's say, 25 who live on their cell phones. Even though they're dirt poor, they're on their cell phone all the time. So they wasted a lot of time chasing their tails with the older folks, but the young people picked up the slack in a hurry. And of course, you probably heard there's been some hacking going on in those Chivo wallets in El Salvador. You know, the government puts $30 worth of Bitcoin in your Chivo wallet if you just download the app. It's free. And as it turns out, as hackers like to do, they find vulnerabilities, and they found one, and lots of wallets have had their $30 swiped. And how'd that happen? Well, in order to get the wallet, you gotta upload your cédula, you know, that's your national ID card, with a scan, a picture of it on your cell phone, and it turns out the app's not smart enough to know if the person setting up the Chivo account, if he or she is the same person on the cédula. So as long as you have a legitimate cédula number, and they're floating around everywhere, you know how much clickbait there is out there. You give away a free Happy Meal, you just put in your email and your cédula number, and now your cédula number's on the internet and in the cloud somewhere for anyone to hack. So anyway, they've had that startup problem. But luckily, in nearly all cases, it's only a loss of $30. But still, that stuff's got to be fixed and in a hurry to regain the people's confidence in the system. All right, now an email from Brad. He says, "Hi, Johnny, you heard that Guatemala grows most, if not all, of its own food, other than the toxic junk food flown in from the U.S., of course. All right, Brad, let's get one thing straight. There are huge junk food factories throughout Latin America, and it's cheap and dirty junk food, plus the usual Dorito stuff. But hey, it's everywhere. That's why Latin Americans are obese. The latest number's over 50%. Anyway, Brad goes on to say, my question is this, most of the food they grow in Guatemala, for example, stay in that country? Second question, is a lot of that homegrown food more or less organic? Or do they typically use a lot of chemicals like Mexico does? Seems like if food shortages in the States become an issue, it'd be a good place to be. Thanks for all the great shows, Brad. All right, Brad, thanks for that. As for question number one, Guatemala produces way more food than they could possibly consume. They export a lot of it to the adjacent countries. Though I don't think too much of it ends up in the States, though some avocados I know do. And of course, Guatemala exports tremendous amounts of coffee. Now, as far as organic, you know, in order to get certified organic, it costs thousands of dollars and a couple of years of monitoring by specific organic food agencies. And since about 90% of the farmers in Guatemala are small truck farmers with just a couple of acres of land, that's never going to happen. No one would ever think of dropping a few grand to have their stuff certified organic. It would be completely out of the question. But it's true, most of them use small amounts of herbicides and pesticides. But I said small amounts because that stuff's expensive and these guys are just living day to day. Most of these small farmers don't even have tractors. Just take a ride in the county and you'll see people hacking away at their fields with machetes. It's a country where they still use massive amounts of manual labor in the agricultural sector. Take, for example, when you do a walkthrough in one of those big produce markets. You pick up an avocado, you look at it, it doesn't look like it's been sprayed. It looks pretty clean. Same thing with melons. Though, I gotta say, I picked up a few tomatoes and big old papayas. Man, are those good for you. And I've noticed here and there some kind of residue of some spraying. And I understand they spray the hell out of carrots, the big ones that are fantastically huge. But the smaller, more normal looking ones, they don't spray. But the big ones, they nail them, so I'd stay away from those. And when I say big, man, you've never seen a carrot that big in the U.S. So knowing that some stuff's always going to be sprayed, at least a bit, I, for example, will wash the skin of papaya and then just cut the skin off. Because 98% of the time, a fruit or vegetable with a really thick husk will not allow an herbicide or pesticide to penetrate beyond the superficial surface. But when you're talking about things like peppers, tomatoes, strawberries, grapes, etc., fruits and vegetables with very thin skins, you're always taking a chance. However, I've noticed in the big supermarket chains, in the produce area, they've always got a few items that are organically grown. Big sign there, especially with bananas, eggs, grapes, mushrooms, and some other stuff. And that stuff's obviously coming from big old farms that have paid thousands of dollars to get certified organic. Now, if you live close to Antigua, Guatemala, there are two big organic produce farms that grow everything organically, and they've got a little store attached where you can buy anything you want, all organic. Now, of course, they've got Costco all over Latin America, too. It's called PriceMart down here. And they've got quite a bit of organic stuff available there, too. And the produce, since it's so time-dependent, they don't ship in from other countries. They get it locally. So when you buy avocados, bananas, potatoes in Costco, it's coming right from the local farms. It's just not worth it to ship it in from the States, usually California, unless otherwise marked on the package. For example, I buy organic blueberries at Costco. Because I don't think they grow them in Latin America. But they grow the hell out of raspberries, blackberries, and strawberries down here. But I wouldn't touch the strawberries. And I'll tell you why. If you look it up, you'll find they're the most sprayed fruit known to man. And because of the porosity of a strawberry and the little hairs it's got, it's almost impossible to wash that stuff out. It clings and penetrates. However, when the day comes that someone actually sells organic strawberries, I'll be first in line. Now, as long as I've been down here in Latin America, I've never, ever seen food shortages anywhere. In fact, when you go through one of the big produce markets, and we do that during the seminar, you'll just see mountains of spoiled fruit they're throwing away. They toss enough to feed an army every single day. That's why, for all the poor people you see selling corn, plums, avocados, and such for nickels and dimes in that market, they're just as happy as can be. They're all well-fed. No one's starving. And half of the people who sell in the big markets live in lean-to shacks nearby to their stalls without running water. That's why when someone at the market offers me a free taste, I never taste it. Fact is, the way it works is every morning before dawn, truck drivers pull in with a truckload of produce, and they sell it to any number of 100 different ladies and guys operating little vegetable stands. They buy a load for cash, and sometimes they take out a loan from the local loan shark who's right on the premises, who charges them maybe 5 or 10% a day, but they pay them back at the end of the day after they've sold. So the truck farmers themselves don't have a stand at the big market. They just sell to the locals who have little stands, and they make their percentage by sorting the stuff, cleaning it, and making a nice or decent display of the stuff. And it's a family affair, too. You see mom and dad with the kids and a couple of little swaddling babies. It's a tradition that is not going to change soon. You got to love it. It's the best competition Walmart ever had. But you know, lots of gringos and expats are afraid to go to those big markets. Why? Because, for one thing, they don't speak Spanish and no one really speaks English there. Not when you're way off the tourist trail like I usually am. And wealthy Latinos and Latinos wouldn't want to be caught dead there. For them, it's a step down. They want to be seen at first world stores. In fact, they dress up to go to Costco. And if you're near a parking lot near the big market and you see a Range Rover or a big SUV, that's usually a sign of a rich mama whose fortunes have fallen. With Walmart and Costco being a little bit too expensive now, she'll send her cleaning lady to the big market and do her shopping for her. Because in the big market, it's less than half, maybe even a quarter of what you'd pay at Walmart or Costco, again called PriceSmart down here. And of course, it's fresher too because the truck farmers are coming in every morning. Who knows how many days an ear of corn's been on the shelf in Walmart? Though ultimately, the best idea if you're worried about food, as far as pesticides and herbicides, that is, get a place with a garden or a nice big yard. Plant a couple fruit trees, lemons, oranges, pears, avocados. Papaya, you got a ton to choose from, and tend to them yourself. Do the organic thing. And when your tree's put out, you'll have a huge pile of rotten fruit too. You'll have to give buckets of it away to the neighbors. By the way, here's something you'll never know unless you've lived down here a long while and lived out in the boonies, too. In fact, all the big chicken farms, I'm not talking about the commercial industrial ones, I'm talking about the little farmer chicken farms. They've always got a couple of 50-pound sacks of chicken poop available for purchase, often sitting by the driveway near the side of the road. In fact, when my gardener was planting trees and shrubs and bushes around the yard, he said, "Let's go get the fertilizer." We jumped in the car and we didn't stop at the feed store where they've got DuPont, Monsanto, and all those gene-distorting synthetic brands. Well, we drove around 20 minutes to a big old private chicken farm and bought about 10 sacks of chicken poop. Thankfully, it was sealed in a sack and dry. It's in big demand and cheap and recyclable. Now, I'm not a gardener, but if I was into gardening, I never would have thought of that. I'd have just went on the internet and picked up some kind of organic or near-organic fertilizer, and that would be it. But the locals, they know. They've got history and tradition behind them. Oh, and by the way, when you're in a small town or in any corner store out in the boonies, you'll see when you go to the checkout more than a couple of boxes of fresh eggs. And I mean, they are fresh from that day. And I remember this one expat lady. Her name was Patty. I was in one of those little stores with her, and I picked up some eggs. And she said, "Yeah, I have to get some too, but I don't want to get them here because I got poop on them." And sure enough, when you open the carton, you always open the carton to see if there's any cracked ones, right? A few of them had small glops of poop and feathers on them. I said, "Patty, these are the freshest, most organic you're ever going to get. The driveway chickens around here are producing these eggs." I said, "Just take them home and rinse them off. Then they'll be like the store-bought eggs. Only 1,000% fresher and more organic." And she said, "Oh, no, it's just the thought of it." And then I said to her, "You know why those eggs have poop and feathers on them? Because with chickens and all egg layers, the egg comes out of the same hole as their poop." And she looked at me and she thought I was joking. And she said, "No way." I said, "I'll bet you a Bitcoin." And that was when Bitcoin was around $1,200, a pretty substantial bet. She said, "No, that's okay. I don't know if you're joking or not, and I'm not a betting person." Well, guess what? A couple of months later, the next seminar I had, she showed up for one of the meet and greets. She said, "My apologies, Johnny. You were right about the eggs and the poop hole. But until you mentioned it, ignorance was bliss. I wish you wouldn't have told me." And I said, "So has it changed your breakfast habits?" And she just made a face. And now, an email from one of our Asian listeners. This comes from Zen One, Mr. Z. He says, "Johnny, Happy New Year. All the best wishes for 2022. I noticed that nowadays many people are moving to Portugal. Any opinions about this country? I think it's a good place since it's so far away from China and Russia. Hope to hear from you soon. Sincerely, Mr. Z." Well, thanks for that, Mr. Z. You know, I've been to Portugal, I think now 4 times. I personally like the Algarve coast. It's really nice and laid back. To the point, sometimes, of being boring. But I'd never want to live there, and I'll tell you why. Not because I don't like the place. And not because it's tough to get residency or anything like that. Because it isn't. It's pretty easy to get residency. But Mr. Z, you know, every single country is completely bankrupt in this world right now. You know that, right? And what do countries do once they've taxed the shit out of everyone? And they know if they push any harder, it'll be the straw that breaks the camel's back and there'll be a revolution. Well, they go to war because that unites people. Nationalism, patriotism, and all that. Just look at Afghanistan and the Gulf Wars. Completely foolish and idiotic moves, but all those strapping young American boys wanted to go and kick some Arab ass. Especially since 9/11, which by all appearances seemed to be a setup to get us into a war. Remember, there was no draft like Vietnam. They didn't need a draft. They had plenty of testosterone-fueled young men signing up. Anyway, Mr. Z, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but Russia's about to boil over. China's about to boil over. Israel and the Arabs are always on the verge of boiling over. And Portugal's still on the European continent. And everywhere in Europe is a strategic target. Every country has nuclear power plants, and those are all strategic targets. That's why in the long term, I like Latin America so much. There's nothing strategic about it anywhere except the Panama Canal, which is the big reason I wouldn't want to live there. And I don't want to be within 2 or 3 countries of that place. Meanwhile, every major city, bridge, and port in Europe has nukes aimed at it. You got to know that. What are the stats, and you can hardly believe them? Russia's got 22,000 nukes in the U.S., what, 30,000 nukes? What do you think they're aimed at? Bottom line, I'd never want to live in Europe. There's powder kegs and hate brewing everywhere. Now, I've been to Europe lots of times, and last time I was there, about, 3.5 years ago now, stayed over a month. The place was flooded with illegal Africans and Muslims. In fact, every time I sat alone on a park bench, some black-as-coal African guy would sit next to me, open up his backpack, and show me all the rip-off pirated Gucci stuff he had for sale. And then he'd get a call on his cell phone from an accomplice telling him where the cops were and that he had 3 minutes to get out because that was the cop's ETA. That must have happened to me 10 times last time I was in Europe, and that was 3.5 years ago, and it's twice as bad now. So yeah, Mr. Z, Portugal's a nice place, but I wouldn't count on it staying that way for the long term, or with any such place in Europe for that matter. And even if there's limited war, there's always limited war, all the refugees are going to be piling in like crazy, like they are already. Oh, and Mr. Z, don't worry, I get those blurbs about Portugal and other places to retire all the time. Slovenia, Andorra, Montenegro, lots of calm European countries, calm for the time being, but they're all in a very likely zone of conflict when the feces hits the fan. So go ahead, Mr. Z, if you trust government bureaucrats and maggot heads to keep a lid on all that, go ahead, move to Portugal. You've got way more faith in those maggotist dickheads than I ever will. Just saying.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.